This is Jason Carello for Pucked in the Head. You can download that podcast at puckedinthehead.com on iTunes, free download, or listen to us at Civil Radio, CIVL.ca. I am in Seattle with our one and only baseball correspondent, John Stewart. No, it's not the John Stewart that you know, looking for some sort of post-Daily Show career. This is John Stewart of Seattle, Washington, whom I've known for 20 years now?
22?
It's a lot.
Just like to say, John Stewart, he may not know much about baseball, but... He's a stand-up fella.
Thank you very much, Jason. It's a pleasure to be here in Seattle with you and talking about baseball.
Before we get on to the Seattle Mariners, I would like to say thank you. I just completed the Portland Rock and Roll Half Marathon.
Yes.
Drove for 3 hours, pardon me, 4 hours, because the traffic in your city is atrocious on a Sunday afternoon.
It's all my fault.
I show up at his door, tell him that I literally stink.
Which was a very true statement.
Which he has known for years anyway. And he graciously allowed me to use his shower. Now, normally you go into someone's house and there's like a little trick you need to know about the shower. There's something different. I would like to say it's interesting when you go to John Stewart's house, there is like a mythological Greek puzzle you need to solve in order to use the shower in his house.
Oh, it's true. The shower in question, which I pointed Jason to without thinking the situation through completely. Let's just say that the shower head is in need of some repair and at the moment requires rather significant manual intervention in order to make it operational.
And at first you're trying your fingernails to turn things, and then you figure out there's actually a geometric puzzle. It was like something out of the Myst video game series.
This is all by design, of course, completely by design. I heard you were coming, and I was like, well, okay, fine.
And I would like to congratulate you on having such things in your house, obviously teaching your children advanced spatial and motor skills early in their lives. That's wonderful.
It's all good part of the master plan, yes.
Okay, so Seattle Mariners. Now, you've been a fan for how long?
Since I was 9, which is many, many, many years ago.
So, since the 20s.
Since the 20s. The franchise was 3 years old when I became a Mariners fan.
Through the Griffey years, the Ichiro years, yes. Through now the Felix era.
You can go back, if you wanted to go back, to the Julio Cruz years. Rupert Jones, mid-late 70s. And that was even before my time, but that's the player that I think everybody remembers. Okay. Alvin Davis was probably the Mariner I think most people who were around then would remember. But yeah, I mean, we had the 95 season. We had Randy Johnson. We had Jay Buhner. We had Edgar Martinez, of course. The guy who I always think of as keeping all the pieces together for my sort of early fandom was Dave Niehaus, who was the Mariners broadcaster for, well, every game for decades. And he was the voice of the Mariners from the inception of the franchise until he passed away in 2010. And what I always remember about Dave is two things. One, sitting in my parents' living room with the game on. Usually.
With Dave Niehaus.
And he sat right there next to me. It was fantastic. It felt like it, right?
He was watching the game on television, broadcasting from your living room.
That's right. And he still made you feel like you were there, even though you knew he wasn't. You had this sense that even though the Mariners were in the middle of another lousy season, you knew it was already over and it was July, right? He had this amazing gift of making you care, even though it really didn't matter.
It was a lot like for hockey fans in Vancouver, Jim Robson had the same effect up there, where for years they were an awful team, but you tuned in just to have this man telling you a story.
Exactly right, which is to me the beauty of radio.
And today, I mean, Rick Riz certainly keeps that tradition. I mean, he worked alongside Dave Niehaus for a very long time. And he is still, even as a very casual baseball fan, I will tune in just to listen to his voice. Yes. It's a very calming voice.
Yes. And he tells the story, like you said, which I think is a huge piece of it. But the other thing...
even more now that they have review in baseball.
Yes. Because now you have yet more time you have to fill with, so, Rick, what do you think about... Yeah, exactly.
They were actually remarking on that today during the game.
That they have that time now that's just sitting there. Yeah.
Now, okay, so let's go up and down the roster right now. So, of course, Felix Hernandez is the superstar on this team.
Absolutely, yes. Felix is, without a doubt, the best pitcher they've had since Randy Johnson was in his heyday. I don't think you can really put anybody else in the middle there. I know he choked here the other day against the Red Sox, but my son and I were at Felix's perfect game. You watch the man out there, and he's that rare combination of passion, complete skill.
Control of that skill.
That's the thing. Exactly. He can put that ball pretty much wherever he wants at the vast majority of the time. And if he can't, you don't know that he can't, which I think the beauty of pitching in baseball is the mental back and forth between the hitter and the pitcher. So even if you think that he maybe doesn't have his best stuff, that's not necessarily going to help you any, because he's still good enough to get you out the vast majority of the time.
Would he be considered, he's not a fastball pitcher. What would he be considered? He's not a knuckler. No. Like, what would he be considered?
It's a good question. I don't know if there's really an easy industry term, if you will.
James Paxton, who is also one of the starters for the Mariners, 85% of his pitches are fastballs.
So Felix, I mean, if you go back to the early years of Felix, which he just got his 2000th career strikeout here recently, and it was...
Slacker.
I know, right? He's only 29. But it was interesting to look at an infographic that showed some of the key points of that in his first, you know, his first strikeout 10 years ago in the majors. And he was throwing fastballs. That was when he first came up, and he was 19 years old. So what's been interesting to watch...
We all throw fastballs at 19, buddy.
Rim shot for Mr. Carrillo. But what's interesting about sort of watching his career progression is that he figured out at some point that... And Paxton, I think most major league pitchers hit this point, unless you're, you know, starting pitchers, right? Relievers are a different story. You can't throw fastballs for 9 innings for very long. The human arm is just not built to do that, especially if you only have one pitch, because sooner or later, major league hitters are going to figure out that you've only got a fastball, and then they're just going to sit and wait for it. And sooner or later, they're going to hit it. And when a major league hitter hits a major league fastball, that ball's out of the park.
Why, for example, James Paxton's recent streak has been so amazing, because he's throwing heat, but he's got career-high 20 scoreless innings in a row. Yes. When you've got Felix Hernandez as your number one pitcher, and then you throw that behind him,
exactly,
the Mariners might actually make some noise, even though they had a slow start this season.
They had a very slow start, but the key, I think, for the M's is the starting pitching was what everybody was banking on. Okay, I mean, the offense looked a lot better, but the starting pitching was just, it was a rock. Iwakuma gets hurt, Paxton has a slow start, Felix is Felix, but I'm missing a pitcher here.
And by the way, I would like to say John is inadvertently following the puck in the head, no research rule, because I sprung this interview on him. He had no idea that I was going to be asking him these questions on tape.
And so, you know, again, in baseball, starters only pitch every five games.
Right.
Right, five-man staff. So you get one bad start, it happens. Felix had a bad start. I can almost guarantee you Felix's next start will be outstanding because all of his other starts have been outstanding, right?
For 10 years.
Right. Paxton had a couple starts in a row where it was like, and it's funny to say this because these guys aren't 18, but major league pitchers, it takes a long time to get there. And you throw a bunch of guys at the wall, kind of like noodles, and then you see which ones stick. And a lot of times you get guys who in AAA are like, these guys are awesome. And then you get them up to the majors, and after a month, you're like, nah, not quite so much.
Not ready yet.
Right? And then sometimes you send them back, and sometimes they spend 2-3 more years in the minors, and they come up, and you're like, that's the guy that I thought it was.
Well, especially with it being such a mental game on the mound, if you bring them up and they think, I made it, then you send them back.
It's such a delicate dance, right? And it's really hard. You listen to GMs like Sorensen or the higher-level coaches, and when they're, I think, really being honest and not just spouting platitudes, one of the things that stands out for me is that idea that it is so much in your head. They can look at a guy, mechanics are sharp, physically everything's there, but you go up and pitch in front of 45,000 people twice a week.
Right? Or in front of zero people, as happened in Baltimore recently.
That has to be one of the weirdest stories I've ever heard. And whether they should or shouldn't have done that, I don't know. I wasn't there. But I can't imagine those guys who were so used to, even on a Tuesday night in April in a lousy market, there's still going to be 15,000 people at a game.
They have people in the stands for practice, yes. for batting practice.
To have an empty stadium is bizarre. What I thought was cool about that story, and the Orioles, I have no strong affiliation with either way, but they paid all of the staff folks who would have worked that game and the other games that got moved out of town. They paid all of them as if they'd worked, even though they couldn't.
We decided earlier what Felix Hernandez is not, but we never really got into what kind of pitcher he is.
So what I would say about Felix at this point in his career is that he can throw multiple pitches pretty much on demand. He's got a fastball that he doesn't throw all the time, but when he throws it, he gets it where he wants it, and it's fast enough.
It's not mid to high 90s.
It's not a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, but if you look at that sort of curve, if you will, of how fast a guy can throw versus what guys can hit, there's a point in there where those lines intersect. But even throwing 98, there's hitters who are going to be able to hit your fastball. There are not nearly as many of them. And when you listen to the hitters talk about it, it's almost an exponential, you know, the difficulty of hitting a fastball grows. It's not a linear relationship. But even at that, if all you've got is heat, there are still guys who are going to be able to hit you. Just not as many of them, not as often. Especially when they've seen you once, twice, three times, and they start to pick up on your motion and everything else.
And Felix really mixes it up.
Yes.
So how often does he bring a fastball, for example?
The last numbers that I remember looking at, it was 20-25% maybe of his pitches. And he'll change it up depending on who he's up against, too. But he's got off-speed stuff, change-up. It's not a slider in the classic sense, but it's something similar
to
that.
Breaking ball.
Breaking ball, yeah. So he's got, I think, four pitches that he can pretty reliably throw for strikes and place. So the beauty of that is you get a catcher in Zunino who really understands the game well and can call a good game, and his defense is excellent too. Because the other thing, if you watch Felix and you watch Zunino when he's catching him, you'll see a lot of the trapping the ball in the dirt because Zunino's saying, just get it down at the knees on a downward slope. I'll stop it. It's not going to get past me. I'll get it. And Felix is pitch to him enough that he trusts him.
Yeah, he's confident that he's going to get that ball.
Exactly. So now you can go for that low strike, which is really hard as a hitter to get, because, I mean, you're down, you're golfing the ball practically.
And even
right?
if you hit it, the chances of you hitting it out of the park are pretty slim.
Exactly.
You might bloop it, a flare off to the opposite field, but yes. you're not hitting.
You're not. This is not. This is not middle of the plate, belt high, over the fences, four run, you know, grand salami. No.
As,
not at all.
As Rick Riz would say, bye-bye baseball!
yes, he would. That's all I would probably say about Felix at this point. But to switch to the offense and to go back to
Well, let's not go to the offense yet.
He doesn't want to talk offense
I don't yet. Want to talk offense yet.
He wants to talk pitching stuff.
The rest of their starting rotation so far, have they been mining the bullpen for that, or have they been bringing kids up?
No, so Walker, who's the name that I was trying to come up with earlier and had forgotten, he was slated to be in the starters this year at the beginning of the season. In his spring training, he looked fantastic. And I think Walker has some of what Paxton has in that it's your first real chance of being in the starting rotation at the beginning of the season at the major league level and all of the pressure that comes along with that. And so I think he's responded to that, as you would expect from someone in that age bracket doing this for the first time. He's had some great starts. I mean, I saw him go 6 2/3 and give up a run, which, I mean, that's a good, high-quality start.
Oh,
right?
If you do that consistently, yes. That's a Cy Young winner.
Yes, but then the start after that, he goes 4 and gives up 5.
Okay.
So it's that whole, you know, and the thing is, you listen to guys who've been around the game a long time, and they'll all tell you, it's like that. And the thing is that pitching, you don't know. This is not like football where after a month or 3 weeks or whatever, you can say they're not making it. It's like you might get that for a year. And then at the end of the year, you go, I'm not sure. It's tough. Pitching is really hard. And again, to go back to Felix, Felix's first season in the majors, we were all excited to see him pitch. But you had no inkling that he was going to be this good.
Right.
You knew he had talent. All these guys have. You don't get this far without talent.
Yeah. I mean, you don't even get to single A without talent.
Yes.
But it's not a, like we were saying earlier. It's in
the head.
It's in the head bone,
yep.
right? Like,
yep.
What do you have in the head bone?
Yeah.
What about their bullpen? Because for all the years that Felix has been here, the bullpen has been an Achilles heel for this team, even when there was a little bit of offense.
And then last year, we had a bullpen that led the league, had the lowest ERA, I believe, or second lowest in the league, and they couldn't score any runs. But coming into the season, everybody thought, Bullpen's solid. Bullpen shouldn't be a problem. What I saw happen was, first 2-3 weeks of the season, other than Felix, the starters couldn't get past six innings. They just, if you got six, you were doing well. They weren't stretched out, and I don't know. It's hard to say exactly.
So how far were they getting last year? Were they going 7 and 8 innings, yes, and the bullpen was only coming in for an inning or two?
Yeah. And some of that is time of the season too. These guys, it's a warm weather sport at heart, and so when you're throwing in Seattle in April and it's 50 and the marine layer that we love to talk about is lingering and the air is cold and damp, and it's really hard to get
50 is American speak for cold.
Yes, sorry, a little American bias there. But what I think it means is that it's harder for these guys to get stretched out enough to go a full game earlier in the season anyway, on top of all the other stuff that they're dealing with. You use the bullpen a lot more when your starters don't get past. And then if the bullpen starts in the sixth and, gosh, you gave up three runs and you had to use three pitchers to get out of the inning, and now you got to use another one in the seventh and another one in the eighth and another... Right?
Guys aren't rested for the second game
exactly.
in the series.
Exactly. Your bullpen's only so big, right? And so these guys, I think, literally got overworked. And so then and there's no break.
Now, 40 games into the season, is the bullpen starting to rest up a little bit? Are we seeing better stuff from the
You saw when relievers? When Felix is able to go 7 or even 8, that's
like
a
Paxton
huge.
Paxton did today.
Paxton went eight. That's huge. So that gives those guys a break. You'll also start to see, as you get a little deeper into the season, a few more days off. Because, the season is 162 games, but it's scattered over more days than that, right? But the way that the days
164
off.
164 days.
Yes.
Yeah, they have 2 days off.
They have 2 days off. It's a brutal season. It's a slog, right? It's a marathon, is really what baseball is. And right. I think people forget that sometimes. Every game matters, yes, but it doesn't matter the same as when you only play 12 or 13 games. You play 160. That's a lot of baseball.
It's diametrically opposed to the NFL situation. Yeah. Where if you go 0-4 at the beginning of the season,
you're done. You've seen teams, and I can remember the 95 Mariners, again, a classic example, the beginning of August. They were nowhere in the hunt.
That was a dramatic example.
It was.
Even by baseball standards, it was a remarkable comeback.
It was a
comeback.
Tremendous comeback. But every season, you're going to find a team who, April and May, they start slow for any number of reasons. Maybe it's injuries. Maybe it's just guys just don't have it. It's sometimes a combination of multiple things. Then you start to see, things start to turn around. And there's a lot of teams where they go into the All-Star break like, we're not quite sure. And then they turn on the second half and they're a playoff contender.
Thank you very much, John Stewart.
Thank you.
Pucked in the Heads baseball correspondent here in Seattle, home of the Mariners.
He said it his best Red Grizz voice. Very nice.
raise money in the banana stand.